Hey, we don't always start our calls with getting grounded, but let's take a moment today and get grounded. I'm feeling it. So, wherever you are, I invite you, if it feels comfortable and right, to close your eyes. And if not, then to, metaphorically close the shades on your eyes. And go inward. And taking a moment, finding your breath. Remembering your body. And starting to call all the parts of yourself back home. Calling all of you back home to you. And seeing with each breath, if you can take up more space inside of yourself. Take up space. Bring yourself here. Bring yourself present. Placing a hand on your heart and connecting in with your heart, honoring your heart, your love, your passion, your anger, all of it, all that you hold in your heart, honor it. And ask your heart, what is it that it wants you to know right now? And together, we'll take a nice deep breath in. And exhale everything out with a sigh. And then allowing your eyes to flutter open, bringing yourself fully present to our time together today. So, welcome. Welcome, everybody. We have another big call today. We're gonna start into our exploration of fear, although we've really already been looking at it, but more formally, we're gonna kind of start looking at fear and the befriend your fear process. We'll get there in a moment. Before we do, I wanted to swing back for a second to our work around resistance archetypes. And we're going to keep on swinging back, and be looking at things. But there's something that we didn't get to. I don't know, I was having one of those days, I guess, when we were looking at resistance archetypes. There was a point that I wanted to make that I just didn't end up making, that is an important one. And I think it answers some of the questions also around, well, how do I know the difference between, this is resistance because it's like I'm being triggered and it's not aligned and it's aligned, but I'm being triggered, or, you know, there's fear versus I'm having resistance because it's simply not right for me. And one of the ways, and this is like nothing is ever 100%, but one of the ways to know the difference is by sensing into the energy of the resistance archetype, by sensing into the energy of it. So remember, archetypes are about energy. Every energy, or every archetype, we can say, has a higher level energy, a more, I don't know, optimal expression of that energy. And every archetype has kind of a lower level energetic expression. So a lot of times you can tell if somebody's gone into a resistance archetype based on the quality of the energy of the resistance. So, you know, one example is, you know, with the victim, the difference between, you know, this just isn't the right time for me because I have a lot going on. I'm busy with this and I'm busy with that, and I don't have the time right now, versus I don't have the time. I'm never going to be able to do this. I'm always too busy and I'll never be able, you know, right? Like that, right? It's both are saying the same thing, but the energy is different. The resistance archetype, the shadow, has a hooky energy to it. Or with the judge, right? Because there's high level expression of the judge and discernment. So the difference between the more optimal expression and the lower level energy expression is, you know, this idea doesn't really make sense for me because I don't believe really in marketing that way. Now that can be tricky sometimes too, right? So we may want to look, but think about that energy versus like, you know, that is such a dumb marketing idea and only way out of integrity people would ever do that, right? One has a hook and one doesn't. Now, again, you know, complexities, right? Sometimes we can become very sophisticated and our resistance archetypes don't have the hook and we still have to look deeper, but that is a one clue to look for. I'll pause there. Any further thoughts on that or questions on that? It's also just like another, I don't know, testament, evidence that energetics are so important. Our energetics as practitioners, our clients' energy, the energy that we're sensing, et cetera. Anybody want to say anything on that? Have any further wisdom or thoughts or questions? Okay, great. So let's step into befriend your fear. So the way that, you know, I've said to you before, so much of what we are looking at and learning and exploring in sacred depth and kind of like the key to being, one of the keys to being a transformational practitioner is that it's not a science, it's an art. There are other programs out there that are going to say, always do this and then do this and then do this. And I don't want to say there's anything wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But what I have found is having a more nuanced approach where you're in really like highly attuned to where your client is at moment by moment. And then having a full toolbox of techniques that are at your disposal that you can make a choice to use, like through that attunement, is ultimately I think an incredibly effective way of holding space for and supporting clients. So that's why I'm giving you lots of tools and techniques. And again, like the good thing about it being an art, not a science, is there isn't ever any, you can only use this one technique in this situation. It's very forgiving, if you will. As we start to step, and also they can, you can mix and match too. So for example, as we step into fear, I want to remind you about resistance archetypes or even the energetics that we looked at last week. Oftentimes the resistance or also the projections are kind of like the outer layer as we looked at, right? It's like, that's how not getting something done is presenting itself. It's like, oh, I got a headache, or, oh, I just can't do it. Or, you know, I don't understand, or I'm procrastinating, you know, whatever it is. And so it's like layers, like, sometimes you'll work on the resistance archetypes when you see it, and you'll do that work. And then you don't have to work on the fear that it's wrapped inside of, because that's enough motivation to take the next steps. The fear eventually at some point will come up, right? But like, you don't have to do it all at once. Sometimes that will present the resistance and the fear, and either because you know a client well, or just because of how you're attuned to the moment, you actually can bypass working on the resistance piece and go straight into working on the fear piece. Sometimes after the fear piece, you might wrap back around or look at a negative thought pattern, you know, et cetera. So anyway, there's lots of different ways, depending on the situation. And all of this is also to say, and we all know this, but it's important to keep on saying this, that oftentimes change is a process. It is not a once and done. This is another way of talking about the difference between the breakthrough and a transformation. But I keep on, this is one of the things that I keep on coming back to, because we're so saturated with so much information from the transformational industry, from TVs, from, you know, all the things where it's like, and then this happened, and this was the definitive moment, and everything was just perfect after that, right? And we kind of, even sometimes when we know better as human beings, as practitioners, as clients, we kind of have this like magical thinking, fairy tale thinking in our head that it's just, yeah, Kim is saying happily ever after. It's like, you know, like I did this thing, right? And then we get so frustrated or depressed or dejected, or feeling like we're doing it wrong, or our clients are doing it, whatever it is, when we buy into those myths of arrival, those myths of once and done. It's a process. And, you know, I share just on the business end of things, I think I've shared this with you before. I share this from the beginning, like on sales calls. You know, I say to prospects, if you're looking for the coach, for the practitioner that's going to fly you to the moon and back in a day, I'm not that person. You know, this is work. This is ongoing work. This is consistent work. So I do believe that quantum leaps are possible, but in my experience, a quantum leap is usually preceded by a whole series of other work before that. I can tell you so many, you know, stories of this being true for me, and this being true for clients, and this idea of coming back and working at things from different angles or from the same angles and leaning in more. So even, you know, I've mentioned before, because I'm still always in process with it, my resistance to video. Now I'm more comfortable teaching on video, but doing like Facebook Lives or doing a video where nobody else is there for marketing purposes, I'm in process with that. That is hard for me. You know, and so when I first started with this, first I looked at the resistance, right? And the resistance for me was the judge. Like, I just don't need to do this. This is stupid, you know, and I didn't need to do it. My business is great in so many other ways, right? But again, that energy, right? Like, ugh, like people that do video, you know, like all the things, right? So I did my resistance archetype work on that. And then as I did my resistance archetype work on that, I saw like, oh, I've also got a fear underneath that of how I look. You know, like a big part of video for me is like, I'm an unkempt person. I haven't fully accepted my age yet. You know, like all the things, right? And then doing befriend your fear around me not looking a certain way, et cetera, you know? And then from there, and again, and through doing that, doing a little bit of video, doing an experiment, right? Putting something out there. But over the years, the inner work, continued to go from there. Then looking at beliefs around how I should look, right? And what are the limiting beliefs there? And that shifted into looking at myth of perfection. And right, so it is a ongoing process, taking action through that process for sure, being on my edge, taking my risks, but not an expectation of like, and now this is magically gone forever, right? Now I can go and I can make a video for marketing purposes and I can get myself to do it, but I'm going to be totally honest, I still have like those feelings inside of me that I'm working through. Linda.
Yes. So my question is, when you said, I did my process work around the resistance archetype, can you tell me what that looks like? When you say that, what is it that you were doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So similar to what we looked at. Now, when you're doing your own work, it's different than a coach holding it, right? So first, just to identify it, right? Like, that's my judge there. That's one of my MOs, right? So number one, the creating awareness, so important. And then number two, leaning in, and we'll get to this concept more today, leaning in to that unsavory, I'm putting it in quotes, right? To that unsavory part of myself. Mm-hmm. So starting to create a relationship. Today, we'll be looking at befriend your fear, but like my attitude is befriend all of your archetypes, befriend all of your parts, right? So creating a dialogue and a relationship with the judge, even the harshest, right? Like even the harshest part, being willing, and you know, like for each of us, it's different. For each of our clients, it's different. I've worked a lot with shadow, so I'm able to go straight there. Like to ask the judge to like tell, you know, first just tell me straight up, like let it all out, right? Some people you don't want to do that with. You want to be softer, right? But then what happens is when you in a safe space, and in a space with guardrails, when you start to dialogue and you start to create that relationship and harness that archetypal energy instead of that archetypal energy harnessing you, the higher level expression starts to come through. Maybe not right away, right? But it starts to come through. And what also happens is you get to know it more and more. And so you get to call it out more and more and shift it more and more. Now, will my harsh judge ever go away? Well, I believe in miracles. I don't want to say never. Has my harsh judge gone away after all these years of working with it? No. But can I get on top of it quicker and quicker and divert it more easily, not be as paralyzed, etc. 100%.
Well, there's value in the harsh judge too. So the harsh judge, right? You know, so it's not like a bad thing that you have to eradicate.
Right.
It's
We don't
serving
want to
a purpose.
eradicate.
It's serving. It produces value. So to
100%.
talk with it, be with it, and see is, I think, important. Yeah, I would love to, and you know, I have missed the last couple of sessions for sure. But if at some point, if you did it already, I'll watch the recording. But would love to see that kind of, you go through that journey, you know, that inner journey of yourself, of when you, like, I get the concepts, but watching it really solidifies that me. Because the only way, what I want to say is, it's going from an academic to having it be more visceral, and to, yeah, get a real time kind of experience of it, to be integrated more as I'm learning to be another way, right?
100%. We will. So what I was going to say next is our Befriend Your Fear work we're going to do in two sessions. Today, we're going to do more of the cognitive foundational understanding. And then next time, we're going to go through the experience.
Okay, great. Is my mic too low?
Nope.
Is it too? Oh, no. Okay.
Perfect.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Thank you, Joanna.
You're welcome. Great questions. Okay. So Linda just brought us kind of segued into, like I said, what I was going to say next today, looking at foundations around fear and befriending your fear. Next week, we'll look at techniques and experience techniques. So let's talk about this concept of befriending your fear, which we've already gotten into today. And I know, so many of you know already, but it's important to say, is that there's a difference, a critical difference between befriending your fear or your resistance, or insert any part of yourself, versus conquering your fear, destroying your fear, slaying your fear, and even letting your fear go. There is a difference between befriending it and letting, we don't want to go for letting it go. It doesn't serve us to let it go. It serves us to befriend it, to become friends. So, because when we don't, right, when we go to destroy, when we go to slay, when we go or avoid or erase, you know, on and on and on and on, it just gets stronger. It just gets, because it wants expression. It wants to be seen and heard. It wants to be known, right? Just like our clients, all humans, we've already looked at this in sacred depth. We want to be seen and heard. So do all of the parts of ourselves. So I always like to tell this story. Some of you may have heard me tell this story. But, you know, as we look at this concept of befriending fears, I always think about, I was a big Sesame Street watcher when I was younger. And I remember, even though I was probably 5 or 6, because I watched Sesame Street way longer than most kids do. I was that kind of kid. But anyway, I remember this like little cartoon parable. I'll never forget it. I can see it in my mind's eye. And it was this story about the sun and the wind. And there was a man walking down the street with a hat and a trench coat. And the wind says to the sun, "Hey, sun, I bet you I'm stronger and more powerful than you. I bet I could get that hat and that trench coat off the man before you can." And Sun was like, "Great, I'm up for it. Let's do this." And so the wind goes first, and with its brute force, it blows, and it blows, and it blows, trying to blow the hat and the coat off the man. But what happens when the wind blows? The man just clings even tighter to his hat and his trench coat, holding on to it for dear life. And so the wind eventually gives up, and it's the sun's turn. And the sun just shines. It just brings some heat. And it shines, and it kind of lovingly shines down on the man. And eventually the man of his own accord chooses to take the hat and the trench coat off. So really the same with fear. Really the same with fear. Jen remembers it. Yeah, it was in cartoon form. So as practitioners, we want to remember this because it can be so easy when we don't to either join our clients in wanting to slay their fears or feeling like we have to just in order to be a good enough practitioner, we have to just help them let go of the fear, right? Or make the fear bad or make it wrong. That's not going to be the way through. Yeah, Lisa's saying what we resist persists, exactly 100%. And by the way, that quote is originally from Jung, who is the first person to define archetypes and archetypal energy. So part of being able for ourselves and for our clients to really hold this space to befriend fear, to befriend all parts of ourselves, all parts of our experience in life too. Part of being able to really hold the space for befriending is to understand and remember that fear is normal. Fear is 100% normal, and it is almost part of healthy, optimal human nature to sometimes, or more than sometimes, have fear rear its head during a growth process. It is healthy, normal, common for fear to be part of a growth process, for fear to come up when an individual is stepping into or looking to step into something that's next for them, that's bigger for them, that is a stretch for them, that is a desire for them. It is normal for it to be part of the up-leveling and expansion process. There is nothing wrong with fear. It doesn't mean that there is anything wrong with the individual experiencing it. It doesn't mean that they are not whole and complete in that moment with the fear exactly as they are. And I'm making such a big point about this because fear has been stigmatized and even pathologized in a way. We've come to see it as something wrong. There's something wrong with me because I have fear, or I'm not going to be able to because I have fear. You're going to be able to if you have fear. That's simply not true. The more that we can see fear as a normal, healthy process, the more that we can hold the energetic space to support our clients to befriend it. Now, why is it normal and healthy? Why is fear normal and healthy? I'll ask you. you know. Why is fear normal and healthy? Let us know in the chat. Exactly. It's there to protect us. It provides us information, amygdala. Yes. It's an indication that something is happening. Great feedback for us. Yes. Yes to all of those things. So we won't go so deep into this right now. In advanced depth, where we kind of like go deep, deep, deep into fear, we get into all the pieces. But for our purposes, for now, here's what I want you to know. In a lot of cases, so number one, as Julia and as Kelsey are saying, fear is there to provide us information, to tell us that something is happening. And then beyond that, for a lot of people or a lot of instances, the fear is there because at some point in our life, there was a real threat. Sometimes that real threat is still true. We'll get there in a moment, right? But at some point in our life, there was a real threat. And so the fear is a mechanism, literally a survival mechanism, to protect us from the threat. So if we look at it in that way, fear is actually something to be respected. It's kind of like a smoke detector, if you will. Like we need, right? I have smoke detectors in my home, absolutely respect them. They're so important. It's just that sometimes the smoke detector needs to get a little bit more fine-tuned to what is actually triggering it, so that it knows the difference between smoke from a dangerous fire versus overcooking dinner. We don't need to fix fear. We don't need, we need to fine tune it, but it's not something to be fixed. Instead, what we want to do is assess if it's helpful or unhelpful, or even more detailed, in what ways is it helpful and in what ways isn't it helpful, and then make proper adjustments, reorientations, and choices based on that information. Again, this is why we want to befriend versus destroy. So let's pause here for a moment and take a look for yourself. Do you usually recognize your, I'm going to ask a couple questions. So first one, do you usually recognize your fear as fear? Or do you more often focus on the resistance? Like you get kind of distracted by the like, oh, I can't, or that's such a stupid idea, or I really need more help, right? Like, or do you usually recognize, ah, this is fear? That's a good question. Just to know for yourself, to get a little more fine-tuned. Next question, considering the conversation we're having about befriending, fear is normal, not pathologizing, et cetera, up until now, how have you approached fear? Have you seen it as a problem? You know, just like honest with yourself, whether for yourself, for clients, for others, what have you believed about fear? How have you approached fear? I'd love to hear from one or two of you. What are you seeing so far? What's coming through so far? What's important here for you? Rose.
I just love this conversation about befriending fear because, excuse me, I've always had this really close relationship with fear, like where fear equals death. Because as a child, I thought it was death. It wasn't, but there were a lot of scary things happening, and I had a speech impediment, and I equated my fear with terribly disastrous, catastrophic things happening. And so I've spent really a lifetime reconciling tons of things about this fear. But what I'm loving about this is this idea of befriending and sort of, and I talk about it with clients, put it in the seat next to you, acknowledge it. But for myself, I'm thinking, I do my best to avoid fear, and I've been really creative with finding ways, distractions, like things that my body does to cover up fear, like exhaustion. I've learned is a it's a cover for fear. So this is just really, I'm ready, and it's really fascinating, and I love it. So thank you.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Yeah, I can feel that. And I think what you're sharing is also such a great example, associating the fear with death. It's like how they are the survival mechanisms, right? It's just then that fine-tuning of
But
it.
I think I'm curious to learn how to really, I don't know, how to really live with fear, because it's really rewiring your nervous system, to befriend it. That's a whole nother thing versus avoid it, or there's lots of ways of running away from it or distracting yourself from it. So this is really good.
Yeah, and it's an important point what you're saying, and that's why, and we'll see this, we'll get there next week. It can't just be on the intellectual level of learning and processing. The befriending part of the befriending process has to involve the body too. Oh yeah.
So what I noticed is that when it comes to fear, it's a knee-jerk reaction. Honestly, the difference between fear and my reaction is probably 5 seconds. And it's that panicked, terror, more likely to go into fight, more likely to attack, more likely to be on the defensive. And for the resistance, it's like this other part of me that's like, ah, I see what's coming up. Welcome. A bit more like a slow burn where it's almost like, ah, I see what's coming up. Okay, let's go into that and leave actual time to see that it is resistance. But where is it here? And this just came up from what you were saying. That's the one where it's just, I bypass that critical faculty and just go straight into reaction mode.
Yeah. So that's great information for yourself, right? Knowing that when you're in a place of reacting versus responding, that you're in your fear. And that's true for most of us, right? And the resistance archetypes are a form of reacting versus responding as well. Good. Thank you, Julia. Wendy is saying in the chat, when I see fear as fear, I can deal with it. I see fear more of a challenge. Oh, wait, I just lost it. And I might want to push back or move past or through it. When I'm in resistance, it's disguised and I miss it. Yeah. And I'm persuaded by the disguised thing. Lisa.
I think it's really subtle, but I think a lot of fear, at least for me, is worry. And I've really mastered that piece. But then there's physical fear. You're out in nature and you think there might be a bear, or like I opened the door and 500 mosquitoes came in last night and went into literally fight or flight. And so I feel like perhaps these need to be separated, because some of these fears are manufactured by ourselves, you know, based on like, you know, fear of death or fear of abandonment or fear of this. And then there is the world, you know, around us.
For sure. And that's why the fear is the smoke detector. And it's about like some of we need it. We need to respect it, because sometimes there is the actual fire versus not. So yes, 100%. And even more to that point, number one, we need to understand that sometimes fear is it's always appropriate, but it's like a completely appropriate response to take action on, right? And then number two, and this is really important also, as practitioners, when we're working with clients, we need to check our filters, particularly if our proximity to power and privilege is closer than our clients, because what we perceive as I just overcooked dinner, for someone else, it may actually be a real-time house fire. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. It's also important. Lisa B.
Yeah, this whole topic has been very much something I've been working with. And I've known for a long time I've been holding myself back because I have this belief I'm not safe, this perception, this feeling I'm not safe. But very recently, there was a shift that was made where I was able to realize I can create my own safety. I can create my own safety. And the recognition that the need to feel safe is a fundamental human need. And I need to meet that need for myself. And so I've been living in this question. So what does that mean? I create my own safety. What does that mean? How do I do that for myself? And I think it's all wrapped up in this whole conversation about kindness and self-compassion, and that fear is not, it's not a pathology, right? It's a basic human need to feel safe. So I'm just sitting with all of that, and something about that shift has made me feel much more empowered and not trying to make my fear go away, you know, just listen to it and give it, you know, just give myself what I need to feel safe.
Yes, 100%. And what I'll also kind of toss to go deeper for you and all of us is that we'll talk about safety in a little bit too, because that's even more complex. But what we need for safety as adults is different than what we needed as safety for children. Oftentimes when fear comes up, it is what our inner child is driving the show. It's what they think they need for safety. They have way less resource than we do, right? Versus what we actually as adults need for safety. So that's a place to look as well.
Yeah, love it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Linda.
Yeah, so I without knowing it, I've been befriending my fear quite a bit. So it, and it's interesting you say it's not in your head, it has to be in your actions, in your body. So in this course that I've created, I have had many times where fear comes up. I say, oh, I'm not ready to do this class. Energetically, I'm not ready. I said I was going to do it on this date and I'm not ready. And I would have all this fear of what people would think and feel and do. And I had to go to a place where I say, you know what? It's okay if they think and feel and do that way. I am really not ready. And, you know, and it's okay to make mistakes. And this is the first time I've ever done this course. And And it's okay. And I literally got emails. Oh, I'm so glad you canceled the class because I wasn't, you know, I really needed the time. And it was a non-issue. But in my mind, the fears of everything that was going to happen came up. So to me, it's about, I think I've done a lot of imperfect action from a, you know, recovering perfectionist again, a lot of imperfect action in this course that it's allowed me to befriend fear and realize that the world will not fall in and that people will still like and respect me and that they'll still learn. So that has been an amazing gift. And where I find that I have challenges around fear is navigating emotional terrain with someone. And I'm in a place of having more discernment of rather than acting right away. And, you know, like before I would, I'm afraid if I say this, it's going to be the wrong thing. It's going to land wrong. And I thought, you know what? It's okay not to say anything right now.
Yeah.
And just let it be. So I've been playing with fear, but I notice when emotional matters, that's where it gets. I don't know how to navigate it. Now I'm like the Joker, playful and light about making mistakes around my course and professional, which is a miracle.
Yeah. So you, right. So now it's about bringing that into the other area. Yeah.
So it's really interesting to watch these.
How it evolves.
Yeah.
Good. Raka, did you want to share something?
Yeah, I did. I kind of put my hand down because, I just did. What I wanted to share is something about fear and limitation. I can't see you, Joanna.
Can you see me now?
Yeah. There's something about fear and limitation, like it being an edge. You know, it's like this boundary that we can't cross. And there's something about respecting that boundary. You know, it's like sort of fear is like the kind of like the guardian at the gate or something for me. You know, it's sort of something about respecting that boundary. And I feel like I'm very familiar with fear. I have a lot of fear about a lot of things. And I feel like I can only cross that boundary when it's the right time. So there is a real timing piece there. But also like I have to grow bigger in order to cross it. So there is a protective quality there of that boundary, and that there is something around there about mastery. So it's like there's something I need to master in order to cross that boundary, if that makes sense. And the other thing that I wanted to say is there's a really key piece for me there about relationship. Having the right relationship at that edge where there is a lot of fear and when I'm afraid to cross, you know, into new territory. And I think that this is where a lot of people get stuck because there just isn't the right relationship there to kind of help them see a different way. And I know in my experience that when I have that, then I can step over that line. And when I don't, I know that I can be, you know, kind of really kind of spinning in that fear for a long time. So that's what I wanted to share.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful. And when you say relationship, do you mean with another person or with the fear itself? Or,
well, you know, I want to say, I guess we're quite conditioned, like in our modern world, to say, oh, self-sufficiency, I want to be able to cultivate my own capacity to meet my fear and all of that. But actually, I think, you know, we need each other. And sometimes we need other people. And I think there's this myth of independence. And yeah, sometimes we can meet our own and sometimes we can't. And there's no shame in that. And, you know, we're all in this together. And yeah, so it's relationship, which whatever relationship is most helpful then. Yeah.
Yeah. Agree 100%. I'm so glad you're bringing all of that in. Thank you. Solveig, did you want to share this piece about releasing the fear in your question?
Sure. Oh, I think it was more, I don't know if I have a question, but okay. I was just saying that I think the way I've been working with it, this is great. And I'm loving thinking about this. And I think I've been thinking a lot about releasing fear, which to me does feel like a befriending. So I'm just curious to hear more about, I think there's even more though, as I was listening, that I'm thinking, okay, like how do I become even more of a friend and not jump to the releasing? Because I'm so, yeah, that's basically what was happening.
Yeah, okay. That's our thought, but I wasn't sure. And I think it's important, right? So first of all, as always, what I have seen to be true or what is my truth is not necessarily anybody else's truth, right? So like the invitation is for you to be curious and find what's true for you. And if releasing is like what works for you, that's amazing, right? But if you want to kind of think and get like maybe a little curious about some other way, what I would say is get more detailed about what you're releasing, right? So what is helpful to release around the fear and what is not helpful to release around the fear?
Yeah, it feels like I'm super excited to hear more because it feels like an invitation to go deeper. That's what I'm feeling, which makes sense.
Yeah, good, 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 good. Yeah.
As Sylvia was talking, it occurred to me that I sometimes hold on tightly to my fear, and that just like any relationship, when we're holding on tightly for no good reason, it creates a lot of angst. I think maybe the releasing, if you think about it as releasing the fear to be able to be on its own, wow, could be like a befriending of it. It just resonated with me as you were speaking to that. And I thought about how much I'm trying to control the fear by holding on to it and maybe keeping it because I'm familiar with it, but maybe I need to be a better friend by letting it have its own space and way.
I love that. And that resonates for me, releasing less as a letting go versus allowing it to have its highest and most optimal and helpful expression. Beautiful. All right, let's keep on going. So just to pause here and say, what I hope one of the things that is starting to come through here. And again, we'll get to the techniques and how to ask and what to do, and all of that is important. But what I hope is starting to come through, everything is always back to energetics, is that what's most important foundationally is how we approach fear energetically. And approaching it with this respect, approaching it with this energy of desire to know it, to be with it, to let it have its express, you know, whatever expression, right? To not hate on it or make it wrong, just that alone starts to shift the relationship and the orientation with the fear. So another piece, and again, none of this is rocket science. It's all so obvious, but it's like the obvious things that we overlook and forget. In any situation where we are pursuing a goal or stepping into a new or bigger or expanded place for ourselves, there's always something to risk. There's always something that is at risk, whether it's a relationship or a way of relating to another person, whether it's a held belief that is at risk, whether it's an identity that's at risk, whether it's a value that's at risk, whether it's an actual physical object that's at risk, whether it's an idea about yourself accept that risk. You can't jump to the other side of the cliff and still be on the original side of the cliff. Or the way, another way that I like to think of it is, because this is also, this kind of then gets into comfort too, right? And yes, we want to be comfortable, but also sometimes our comfort keeps us from being willing to take the risk. We can't sit comfy on the couch and also get up and get the chocolate from the kitchen at the same time. We have to be willing to risk the comfort of sitting on the couch or getting up, right, and going to the thing that we want. A lot of people make the mistake in thinking, I'm sorry, I'm mixing metaphors here, but a lot of people make the mistake in thinking that they need for the fear to not be there in order to jump the cliff, you know? But really it's like, yes, we want to work it to a place where we're willing to take the leap. But I can't personally think of any time in my life where I've taken a real leap and there hasn't been fear. Again, because of the risk, because there is always something to be risked. So, this is just a good moment to remind you of back to our visioning module of stretch, risk, or die. Sometimes when you're working with fear and you're still like on the cognitive level, it can be helpful to ask a client, okay, so what is the actual risk of taking this action? Right? What is, and to actually assess it, right? To do like a risk, a cognitive risk assessment, right? So what are the actual risks here? Well, if I do this video, you know, I might not look good. And if I don't look good, right? Like whatever it is. Or if I do internet dating, I might get my feelings hurt. I might blah, I might, right? Like all the things, right? So to actually see it in black and white, like these are the actual risks. And then to go through each one and say, okay, is this a risk? Is this one a stretch, a risk, or a die? Is this a stretch, a risk, or a die, right? And to, you know, so every now and again, it's like enough to just get to the next action step. So you don't even have to necessarily go into the full process, right? But to just do that risk assessment with somebody. Okay, so we spoke about risk. We spoke about our ego likes to be comfortable. And our ego, as Lisa was saying, our egos like to be safe. Or we want to feel that we have a sense of safety. So our egos want it, keep us safe. It's actually very important to be kept safe. Our fear is doing that as well. But just because something feels safe, number one, doesn't mean that it's the best option for us. Now, sometimes it is, right? And this is back to checking our filters when we're working with clients, right? But sometimes human beings can have a kind of proclivity to want to stay with what's familiar, what feels comfortable, what feels safe, when really that's not, you know, that's not what's aligned for them anymore. But I want us to even just think about this concept of safety for a moment, and I'm never articulate, by the way. Like, I've taught this so many times, and I need your help with this because I'm never fully articulate when I share about this, but it's important, and we'll eventually get there, and you'll share your wisdom too. I believe that it's important, as Lisa said, for us to create safety for ourselves. But I also, at the same time, believe that to be alive means to be living with the fact that there is never full and complete safety. We don't know what the future holds ever. We are actually always in the mystery, no matter how much we want to convince ourselves that we are in the clarity. And in the movement of life, in the ever-changing, you know, evolution of life, and in that mystery, there is actually never full security. We don't know what's happening next. There are no guarantees about anything in life, truly. Nothing, and I don't mean this in a negative way to scare anyone, but like in this, I think it's important to look at, like, nothing is secure, and that is part of the beauty of being alive. Anything can happen. That is amazing and scary all at the same time. So I like to think about this kind of like in relationship again to the cycles of the earth. In the autumn, the trees have these beautiful leaves, the incredible, brilliant colors. But in order to get to their next evolution, they need to risk those leaves. The leaves need to shed. The winter needs to happen to get to that next place. We're always in one way or another, you know, in that cycle. I like to look at this not just because it's like interesting from a philosophical point of view, but because as a practitioner, this understanding has really helped me hold space for individuals who are ready to have the courage to risk. All right, so let me pause there. Clicking around this for you, or what more do you want to add, or what are you seeing in these pieces around risk and comfort and security and safety? We can't be in the business of always keeping our clients safe. And it's like, it's both, right? Someone wrote, it's a paradox. Like, we want to do everything that we can to create guardrails and safe containers. Like, we want to do everything we can to keep our clients safe and also to not, in a way. And again, like I say, I'm not articulate on this. So anybody that has more words, please. Anita.
I'm not sure if I can properly articulate this either. I've been someone who has lived her whole life avoiding her fears. And I didn't realize that till someone told me about it, someone who didn't even know me, just observed. It's like, you've created your whole life to avoid everything that you're afraid of, everything that can be push you. And at the same time, everyone calls me very courageous because I do so many things that they were never there of doing. So it's this really interesting paradox. And I wouldn't call it a dogma or mantra or whatever the word, has always been what my parents have told me. There's no right or wrong. As long as you can feel and realize all the consequences, no matter what direction something can go in, and then base your decision on how much you can take ownership of, if how much you can be okay with happening. And so that way, no matter how it goes, at least I have no regrets, because I knew, I had an idea of all that could happen, and I went taking that risk anyway. Yeah. And that has helped me a lot.
Yeah.
With everything. And that brings in the part where, I don't remember her name, but she spoke about the safety to help me go forward.
Yeah.
What do I need? Okay, to help me. Okay, this consequence, these things can happen. How can I limit or avoid these consequences? And
yeah. 100%. I'm so glad you're bringing that in. And what you're sharing is actually, well, you'll see it is part of the befriend your fear process, because in the end, it's not about deciding to take the action or not take the action that's important. What's important, as you say, is owning and respecting and honoring whatever decision you make. Beautiful. Thank you. Raka.
What occurs to me is inquiring into where one is getting one's safety from. So like, am I getting my safety from something that, you know, just holding on tight to something that isn't actually serving anyone or anything, or something that's dead, basically. But that's where I'm deriving my sense of safety from. And is it possible to get one's sense of safety from somewhere else?
Yes.
Because we need safety. And so how can we be creative about how we get that safety? And I hear you about, like, you know, I guess one would have to be enlightened to be perfectly safe in the world, right? However you kind of interpret that word. But what occurs to me is in this process of acquiring more safety that we need to journey through life. Yeah, there's a lot of learning that can happen then, in the sense of like getting creative about how can I find safety in this moment. Yes. And also there is really there's something about skill there for me, like about like somatic or meditative or cognitive, whatever, like developing the skill. But there's also something about relationship, because I think safety is in relationship. It's in right relationship.
Yes.
And not wrong relationship, you know what I mean? So. And being able to identify those places, you know, so there's skill, but there's also each other and where.
You cut out, Raka. You froze. All right, hopefully we'll come back there. Rose, before you go, I just want to share. So this is important. I love Raka's question around like, where can I find the safety? But here's the other piece that goes along with it too, which we want to think about when we're working with our clients, and also ask, which is, what is the appropriate definition of safety in this situation? Having clarity on that, and that's related to the risk assessment, right? Having clarity on that, and it can change situation by situation, right? But what is the appropriate, what is the aligned definition of safety for this situation? That can be really helpful too, on a cognitive level, to support a client to like see that distinction between the overcooked meal versus the house being on fire. Rose.
Yeah, it seems that this whole conversation then leads us to something that can, that's larger than us. And so this idea of the mystery and this conversation about safety, because if I'm looking at my own safety from being a small human in this physical body, you know, you're right, there's no way I could ever have total 100% safety, and staying locked in a, you know, under the covers doesn't work. And so in my own life, I guess I'm exploring this concept of being, you know, that there's something, just trusting the flow of the universe, the flow of life, you know, so it speaks to sort of a larger sense of safety that I know for me personally has, it's a place that I can go, and I don't, it's a huge lesson in surrender. And so leaving my small self behind, or putting her aside, or holding her, acknowledging those fears, befriending, and recognizing that I and we are all part of something larger, which is sometimes challenging to put words to, depending on where our clients are with all that.
Yeah, 100%. And what you're speaking to in one way is the four levels of learning and processing that spirit level, right? Remember, the spirit level is about trusting in something that's bigger than we are. And so we'll see next week there, you know, in the process that it, we need to activate that trust level and that spirit level. Good. Bruce.
This is helpful, Joanna. Thank you. I realize that I feel the safest, I feel the least afraid when I'm in really high risk situations where I'm certain that I'm giving my gift. Because I feel grounded. I feel like the risk is worth it. I feel it's connected to somewhat Rose is saying. I feel like I'm part of something bigger, serving something more than just myself. And when I get the most afraid is when I know that I'm off my path and I continue to do that thing. I get really disoriented. I can't think straight. My reptilian brain kicks in immediately. So it's very clarifying. Thank you, Joanna.
Yeah, thank you. I get chills when you say that. That resonates for me. Okay. Let's keep on going. All right, so we're gonna go from this like deep conversation to something not as deep. And I know you've probably heard this before, but I do think it is worth mentioning for us to understand on a foundational level. The acronym for fear, which you have probably heard before, which is false evidence appearing real. False evidence appearing real. So what that means is that oftentimes when we are in a place of fear, we begin to look for, to search for any evidence, or even bend the facts to find evidence in any little experience or scenario or email or glance. That our fear is confirmed. But of course, that evidence isn't necessarily real. It's just that we're looking for a confirmation of the fear. Right? So, for example, for me, like one of my core fears is that people hate me. You know, like they just, people hate me, and that's proof that I am just bad. Like I'm bad to the bone. When I go into that fear and it is unchecked, I can find evidence all over the place that everybody hates me. Like if somebody doesn't email me back right away, for sure they hate me and I am bad, right? You know, like I'm in a launch and people don't buy right away. Oh, for sure. I am hated. Like I am hated, you know, in an extreme way. And I am bad, right? Even if I'm on my edge in a particular way when I'm teaching, and if I go into that fear that people hate me, if I don't see right away that, you know, that people like what I'm teaching, oh, I am definitely hated, right? So all of those things could be evidence that I'm hated and bad to the bone. But all of those things could be evident, just mean so many other things too, right? And have nothing to do with it. But when I'm in my fear and it's unchecked and it's gripping me, I am for sure positive of what all of those things mean. Those are signs, those are signals. So take a moment and see, is there a place where you're doing this right now, where you're finding false evidence that appears real for your fear? Maybe start to poke some holes to see how that evidence could not mean that your fear is validated, that what you fear is actually real. Yeah, Julia's saying that when you speak in class, it almost always triggers that. I don't know if when you say she, you mean me. And Julia, if you do, yes, I've been judging you. No, not at all, right? That is just false evidence appearing real. All right, anything that wants to be added about this false evidence appearing real? Oh, okay, good. So I find it helpful. Some of you have heard this before. Some of you were on the Aligned Visibility class that I did a couple weeks ago. I was sharing this there as well. I find it helpful just for myself and also as practitioners to kind of be familiar with some of the core fears that are pretty common for people. I'm gonna go through them pretty quickly right now. You'll get a resource sheet on it. This is not exhaustive, right? Like there are other core fears to add to this. But this list, yeah, this is not exhaustive, I'll say that. And also, back to the survival piece, for each of these four fears that I'll mention, when they're active, they're usually attached, at which you can pick any of them, they're usually attached to and this is threatening my existence. And this is threatening my survival. So for example, one of the most common fears is fear of failure, right? I'm not gonna take this action because I'm gonna fail, right? When that's active, it's attached to, and if I fail at this goal, it means that I'm a failure as a human being. And if I'm a failure as a human being, like, right, like my survival as I know it is threatened in one way or another. Back again to the difference between the adult driving the ship and the inner child driving the ship. If that's a fear for your inner child, the fear of failure, it is most likely because at some point, not even child, it could be in adulthood, whatever, at any point, like the possibility of failure literally was associated with some kind of survival piece. If that makes sense, let me know if it does. Yeah. Okay. So fear of failure, a biggie. Fear of not being good enough. We have looked at that already. That's often a biggie that, and again, I share these because when we're working with ourselves or clients, you know, we want to ask them, we want them to come up with what the fear is. But it's good for us to sort of know the range. Sometimes we need to help toss some things out or, you know, have some guesses. The fear of not knowing how can be a biggie for some people, like, because I don't know the steps, because I don't know how to do this, because I don't know how it will work out, I can't do this thing. Sometimes an underlying fear is the fear of success, right? So at first that might sound funny, like, don't we all want to be successful? But if we have any preconceived negative notions of what it means to be successful, if we have any judgment around what kind of people successful people are, what they have to do or who they have to step on to create that success, there might be a fear of success rolling around. Fear of being seen, fear of visibility. And, you know, I just want to say for those of you that believe in, and, you know, wounding that doesn't just come from this lifetime, you know, ancestral lineage, past lives, you know, whatever it is, this can be in the mix, right? So I think everyone has heard me say, like, for me, a big part of my fear of visibility, 100%, not only comes from this lifetime, but it comes from my ancestors and my Jewish heritage and my Jewish lineage. It was passed down to me, right? I was in my grandmother's womb when my mother was an egg inside of her, right? Any trauma that she experienced, I was actually inside of her for that. A fear of not deserving what we want. So this is one I put in there. I've heard this over the years from clients a bit, like, what if I don't actually deserve this? What if I don't actually deserve to have a great relationship or a thriving business or to get my book published, you know, whatever it is, right? So there can be this fear that I actually, like, don't deserve it. Fear of losing connection with yourself or your loved ones. If there's a fear that if you achieve what you want to achieve, you won't have enough time for your children, for your parents, for your friends, for your artwork, for, you know, whatever it is, fear of losing connection with self or loved ones, that can be enough to hold somebody back from moving forward. Fear of surpassing loved ones. Kind of similar, but to the losing connection, but a little bit different. That's a biggie for me. My family code around being miserable is very big, right? So like any going beyond those boundaries, there's that of surpassing my family in that. There's a lot of fear of being alone, a lot of fear being alone and betrayal of them. Like they will perish if I go beyond that border, right? That's something I've had to work with a lot in my life. Fear of getting hurt in any sense of the word. Fear of others getting angry. Right, so there are fear of abandonment, you know, a lot of things around either being left alone or, you know, literal fear of harm. Okay, we have just a few minutes left. So I think this is a good place to pause on curriculum for now. Take a moment and write down what is it that you're really taking away for yourself from our time together today. What feels really important? And actually, let's do two things. What feels really important for you personally? And what is a big key takeaway for you as a practitioner? I'd love to hear from a few of you. What are you taking away? Or what questions do you have? Kelsey.
For myself, I think the child driving the fear is really an aha moment for me, or just, I know we've explored that together in the past, but just remembering that that child really is in the driver's seat quite often. And so just continuing to have more conversations with that child. And then I think as a practitioner, as you said, it's simple, but just holding space for the energetics of fear and not shying away from talking about it or digging a little deeper into fear with clients.
Yeah, beautiful. Good. I'm so glad. Yeah. And we have to, like, I'm a big believer in repetition. It's like we learn, right? We learn one thing and we get it, and then we have to get it again, and we have to get it again, and we have to get it again. Good. Who else? I'd love to hear from one more person. What are you taking away for yourself? Who wants to share? Julia.
Yes. How fear and resistance interplay, but also just how fundamentally different they are. For the longest time, it was focusing either on fear or focusing on resistance without actually understanding how the two of them work together. So that was really phenomenal. And then looking at what came up and not feeling anything around it, but thinking I do have something to work with here, the fear of not deserving, with the idea that if I don't get it, it means I'm not worth it. And that coming from, growing up, that's how you were rewarded. You know, you got it. So here you go. You didn't get it. So regardless of whether it was a necessity of life or if it was an extravagance, and seeing how that still plays, not as deeply. So I'm also just curious how to work with that, because I do feel deserving. And even when I think about making money in my business, I no longer feel like, oh God, how do I justify that? Now I'm like, yes, come, you know, but how to still work with that think is what I believe.
Yeah, we'll get there next week. Promise, promise. Right, Natalie.
Yeah, this has been my favorite module. I absolutely loved it. And I feel like it's because I have had a bit of shame around fear and this kind of like I just love the way you've normalized it and made it. I guess what I'm taking away more than anything is that living in the mystery, you know, that being in the mystery, it is scary and it's exciting and it is normal to feel fear. You know, because it's such a habit of to kind of push it away and put on this brave face. So yeah, it's just like such an aha moment. Really, so many breakthroughs in this this module. Thank you so much. Like, I'm gonna really like look and absorb all the amazing wisdom that you've shared in this session. So thank you so much for this.
You're so welcome. Thank you. Thank you to everybody that shared their wisdom today too. There's some great, we're at time, so I'm going to honor that, but there's some great comments in the chat. So please take a look. This is to be continued. We'll get to part two next week. So you'll have a couple of resource sheets between now and then. And I can't wait to see you next week. Have a good rest of your day. Bye.